That music was absolutely exquisite. It's just perfect, and perfect for the theme that I want to talk about. I want to talk about the heart center, and the pivotal nature of it. But I also first want to welcome, as well as the crowd that's here. It's wonderful to see you all. In fact, it's very touching. I'm seeing people that I've known virtually my whole adult life. I see others that I've known their whole life, adult or not. And I see a lot of new friends, and as Davey said, people from all over the world. It's wonderful to have a sense of your family being all over the world. And speaking of that, I also want to welcome those who are watching virtually, watching through the internet. We have many people who are attending Spiritual Renewal Week from wherever they are, be that India or Australia or Russia or wherever. It's wonderful. So welcome to you too. As I said, I want to talk this morning mainly about the heart, the heart's energy, and the heart center, the chakra. The heart is the pivotal point for us as devotees. Partly that's because Master explained that the heart is the center for the feeling element. He called it the primordial feeling element, the chitva. There's a statement, in fact, the as soon as Patanjali, the great, great exponent of yoga, as soon as he says his first aphorism is, and now we come to the study of the science of yoga, meaning that it takes a long time before you get to the point where you want to study that which will take you out of delusion. Up until that time, you're too busy playing with delusion, mucking around in Maya, as people have said. Then his second aphorism is Yogas Chitva Vritti Nirod. Yoga is the neutralization of the vortices of feeling, or as Master translated it, the vortices of primordial feeling. Now, he said primordial feeling, his definition of primordial feeling, as opposed to our feelings, is that primordial feeling is that nature within us that reacts in a feeling sense, and it contains within it all feelings, good, bad, up, down, sideways, everything. All the feelings, and that feeling nature is really the way, the primary way that we perceive the world. It isn't through the intellect. It isn't through the mind. When Swami first said that, I puzzled on that for quite a while. It seemed, well, don't we really perceive through the senses, through the through cognizing the world, by seeing things, by thinking things out? We do perceive that way, but that's in a sense an overlay on our feelings. Think about the deeper aspect. Think about a paramecium floating in the ocean and all those little arms, whatever they're called, you know, working away busily. He isn't intellectualizing a whole lot. There's probably not even a whole lot of cognizing going on, but there's something going on at a basic level that's more feeling. He's feeling hungry, he's feeling the, I don't know, the salinity is off, the, I don't know what he's feeling. Swami, I loved Swami. Swami one time was talking about, I don't know, a little organism like a mollusk, that all it did for 20 years was go. And just the expression on his face, mimicking the consciousness of a mollusk, was wonderful. Well, I don't want to try to mimic the consciousness of a paramecium, but whatever it's doing, it isn't intellectualizing. It's working with its feeling nature. And as you begin the long evolutionary trail coming up, you come up primarily instinctually and working with feeling, not with the mind and not with the intellect. And so by the time we come to the human level, the intellect really is an overlay on top of the basic way that we perceive and react to the world. And in fact, when we get that ability to use the mind, it's a special dispensation. And in fact, Master said that in the human form, we are really different from the animal kingdom, because when we come into the human form, we have a nervous system and an intellect that is developed enough, evolved enough, so that with that nervous system, we can finally find moksha or liberation. And so there's a special dispensation. There's also a special combination gift and curse, that at the human level, we're given free will. Until that time, all of that feeling nature and so on, instinctual reactions, we're on a conveyor belt. But when we have the human level of development, then we have free will. And that free will can move us toward God or move us away from God. And that, in essence, is really our only choice. That's the only use of free will that we have, is to move toward God or move away from God. It doesn't seem that way. It seems like we get to choose what kind of coffee we want at Starbucks. But that isn't really free will. It's really based upon a long, long train of likes and dislikes that we've built up. So at the heart center becomes pivotal, partly because yoga's chitta-vritti nirodha, what that means is that when we still will neutralize the waves or whirlpools, literally whirlpools, of that primordial feeling, what happens? We automatically attain the state of yoga. That's Patanjali's definition. Yoga is union, union of the soul with God, union of us with all of creation, which is the Christ consciousness. But that neutralization in the heart center, in the area of chitta, is the key to it all. So this morning I want to talk about working with that. Master said when he had his great samadhi experience that he wrote about in Autobiography of a Yogi, Experience in Cosmic Consciousness. I'm going to read this because it's quite an astounding state. After his experience in cosmic consciousness, as he was beginning to come out of that, but before he had, he said, "I cognized the center of the Imperium as a point of intuitive perception in my heart. Irradiating splendor issued from my nucleus to every part of the universal structure." Now, that's quite an astounding statement, that the center of all of creation was a point of intuitive perception in his heart. Now, does that mean that Master, as an individual, was a unique creation so that he was the center of the universe? No. What it means is that Master was feeling what all of us will feel eventually, because each one of us is the center of the universe. And the center of that center of the universe is a point within our own heart. Isn't that astounding? When we think of kind of two dimensions, if you think of a circle, where is the center of the circle? There's only one point that becomes the center of the circle, isn't there? You can have thousands of other points, but there's only one where you can draw that circle around it. But think of a sphere. Think in three dimensions. What's the center of a sphere? You can't, in the center of the, I'm talking about now the skin of the sphere. In the center of the sphere, in the nothing, if you think of a balloon, in the area of nothingness, there's a center that produces that. But on the surface of that, where is the center? Any point you pick is the center of that whole sphere, isn't it? You can radiate out everything from there. So you could pick 100 billion, or at least for the Earth, let's just pick 6.5 billion points on that sphere of the Earth, and every one is the center of it. And the center of every one of those centers is a point in our own heart. That's why Master said that God is center everywhere, circumference nowhere. Everywhere there, every point of space is the center of God, but our center of perception. So he said, I cognized that the center of the Imperium as a vast, as a point within my own center, intuitive center. So our center is in the heart. And if we can learn to work correctly with the energy of the heart, then we have the key that really begins to untie everything. Little over a year, half a year ago, we had a great saint that passed here in the community, Maria Warner. And she realized she had been battling cancer for some time, for years actually, and had battled it off. But she knew, we later found out that she knew that she was going to pass. She had a, she was our webmaster, and she had a person working with her in the web department. And when he came on, she said, I'm going to train you as my replacement because I only have about 3 years left. And it was 3 years when she passed. But when she found out, knew that she had a widespread reoccurrence of cancer in the brain, they were going, she and her husband were going into the hospital in order to have the tests that were going to tell her whether she did or not, but for her was going to confirm what she already knew. And naturally, that is one of the difficult points of life when you know your life is about to end, and you're with your loved one and you know that you're going to have to leave. And her husband, Dave, was feeling a little shaky. Maria was the sweetest tough cookie I've ever known. But she was a tough cookie. Just to skip ahead, we were with her in the last month quite a bit. And at one point, we were staying in L.A., and at one point we knew that we had to leave and go back, but we were saying goodbye and telling Maria how much we loved her because we didn't know if we would see her again. And, you know, she was very, very withdrawn by this point. And so we told her we loved her, and she very softly came out of her withdrawn state and said, I love you too. Now get back to work. So she's just wonderful soul. But as she was going into the hospital, into the room, and her husband Dave was pushing her, and she could feel his difficulty in it, she said, the essence of the essence of the teachings, three sentences, she said, detach yourself, control the reactive process, live the teachings. That was it. Now that is the spiritual path. Detach yourself, control the reactive process, live the teachings. Now I want to talk about that today because all of that is done primarily in the heart. In order to create an outward universe, God has to take from unity and extend outward into diversity. And part of the way that that's done is through the Om vibration. So Swami has often given the illustration that if you have a tuning fork, and that tuning fork has no movement to it, there's no sound. But if you wrap that tuning fork and make those tines vibrate, that vibration, movement back and forth, creates a sound. Now, when God does that and puts his consciousness into vibration, that creates a sound too, which is the sound of Om. So out of that vibration comes all of creation. But that movement back and forth is duality. Without duality, you can't have an outward creation, just as without movement on the tuning fork, you can't have an outward sound. And so that movement of separation, there are two movements, actually. One is the separation from unity into diversity, and the other is from light into darkness, or higher into lower. And those two movements define the whole of creation. There's a story that many have heard and some haven't, that Master used to tell of how when God was creating the world, he created it perfectly and created everything and created people, and the first person sat down, being created perfectly, sat down in meditation, merged right back into God. God kind of scratched his head and said, well, that didn't last very long. I think I'll do that again. So he did it again, and person being perfect sat down, meditated, merged back into him. He said, well, I'm going to have to do something different. And so here, this time, he created the force of Maya. Maya means separation. And so with the force of Maya, the person sat down to meditate, probably didn't sit down to meditate because he was too involved in all the separation. And so God has to separate in order to have creation. Somebody sent me a cartoon a little while ago, said God separating dark from light. And God was standing at the washing machine putting the black socks in one, the white socks in the other. So, but God had to separate dark from light in order to create creation. He had to separate, he had to take unity and make it into diversity. And that diversity is the force of Maya. Literally, it means the measurer or the separator, that which separates. So that force of Maya or delusion is the way that Master explained that God keeps the universe alive. Anandi was talking yesterday about, is Satan real? Satan is Maya. Satan is the force of separation, and it's a conscious, real force that tries to keep existence going, and it has its role. But the farther out you get from the center, the farther and farther away from the center of light, the farther and farther into darkness you get. And darkness, because God also wants to create a force of unity, the force of unity within us, as we get farther and farther separated, what the feeling nature feels is pain and lack and yearning and hunger and all of the things that make us want to seek unity again. And so that first expression outward, so I'm going to talk first about the outward and inward aspect of creation, then the up and down. So detach yourself has to do with the outward and inward aspect of creation. And when Master taught, he taught so many, many different subjects and thoughts and teachings and techniques, and hundreds and hundreds of them when you get to it. And sometimes for a newcomer, you begin to look at the vast scope of these teachings, and you just, sometimes it's discouraging, because how can I do all of that? Master said, you don't have to do it all. Do 1/100th of what I ask you to do and you'll get there. You just have to try. That's all. But when he was teaching, so all of this vast diversity of teachings that he gave was for the public, because like a fisherman, you have to have a lot of different flies in your little box, because not every fish is going to bite on the same bait. So he has to talk about health, and he has to talk about ghosts, and he has to talk about friendship, and the teachings of Raja Yoga and Karma Yoga and the Gita and the Bible and all of those things, because you don't know what's going to attract different people waiting for that. But so he talks about all these different things, but basically what he talked about to his close disciples were really just two things: non-attachment and attunement. We have, unfortunately, we can't let it out to the public because it's private notes that were taken down in shorthand of his classes to a group of close disciples that he gave in the afternoons, usually at Encinitas, but sometimes at Mount Washington, over the course of a few years on Patanjali. And so there are about 45 of these lessons. And I was going through them, trying to give titles to them. And so I got into the, you know, after the clear, obvious titles that he had talked about, every talk seemed to be about non-attachment. So chapter 20, non-attachment. Chapter 21, non-attachment. Chapter 22 through 30, non-attachment. Because that was his theme to his close disciples. So why the hard energy, again, going out, spreading out, attaching itself, why is that so important on the spiritual path? Why is non-attachment so important? Because unity lies within, diversity lies without. And as we put our consciousness out into diversity, the farther out that it goes, the more and more we give away the power of the self. Happiness lies within, but the more we give that power out to objects and to people and to events and to circumstances, the more our happiness becomes dependent on that, the farther and farther into Maya we get. And so the farther into Maya that we get, the more unhappy we get, and the more also confused we get. And we lose all our power. So if our power to be happy, ultimately our power to be joyful, is completely inside of us, inside our own control, if we extend that out, we think that money is going to make us happy, that fame is going to make us happy, that the way people behave is going to make us happy. And then we get into the thought that if the way people behave is going to make me happy, then my real job is to make them behave themselves. And if I get in an argument, I don't have to look at my part of the argument. My real responsibility is to get them to straighten up and act the way that I want them to act. And if they do that, then I'm going to be happy. Now, does that work? I don't think so. Hasn't worked for anybody that I know. Hasn't worked for me. And so we have to begin to take back our power. Our power of happiness is not in money. It's not in how other people think about us. It's not in how other people behave. It's not in what circumstances happen. Right now, the world is in a state of great concern and fear because economically and politically things are not very stable. Why are we in a state of fear? Because the mass consciousness has given away its power to politicians and to money, and the thought form has been, if I have more and more, I will be happier and happier. But it doesn't work. And so that paradigm is under attack right now, and people are feeling very, very upset. So how do we begin to take control over that outward thing? The first thing we have to do is we have to awaken the energy to pull back into our own hearts. I want to tell a couple of stories, because when we can get our own heart energy harmonized, then things change completely. One of the finest movies I've ever seen, in fact, I would say the best movie I have ever seen in my life, is Schindler's List. It's also considered one of the top 5 or 6 movies by whatever Academy votes on that, of movies in all time. I watched it once. I don't think I can ever watch it again. Davey and I watched it together. We bought a video of it. We never took it out of the wrapper, because I don't think I can watch it. It's so poignant and so difficult to watch, but it is a beautiful story of someone who corrects his heart energy. Schindler was German. He was a Nazi, and he was a businessman. And he came to Poland in order to start a company, because he thought that there were a lot of profits to be made in making things that were needed for the war, Second World War. And so, being a businessman, he started his factory. He needed workers. He figured out very cleverly that the cheapest workers of all were the Polish Jews, because they were in terrible circumstances and couldn't get work, and so he could hire them for nothing and have them do the work and make tons of money doing that. So his factory was buzzing along, and the German hierarchy, the Nazis, they were really happy with him, because they were happy to give him lots of money, because he was really producing a lot and everything was going well in that sense. But then a turn of heart happened for him. He began to see around him the atrocities that were happening. And first he tried to ignore them. Isn't that what we do when we see something really wrong? We try to ignore it. It isn't my job. Isn't my thing. But then he realized that he couldn't ignore it. And so he began to protect his workers. And first he moved them into, because they were going into the ghettos and they were taking all the Jews and sending them to concentration camps, he set up his own housing area for his factory workers. And he began working with them more and more closely, trying to protect them. And then finally, toward the end of the war, the Nazis wanted to clean up all the evidence of their atrocities, and so they were exterminating all of the Jews in his area. And the only way that he could protect these people who by now had become his friends and co-workers was to convince the hierarchy that what he was going to do was he was going to take all of them and he was going to move them en masse so that he could start another factory in another place and could continue the war effort. Not satisfied them, except that he had to pay for each one that he took. That was Schindler's List. All of these people that he was trying to save, there were over... It's very touching. Over 1,000 of them. And he gave away his entire fortune, all his money, in order to do that. That turn of the heart's energy where all he saw at the beginning was profit, money, other people taking advantage. The turn of energy that saw these people are the same as me. These people are an extension of me. And my job is to work with that reality of that unity. So that turn of energy of unity from diversity is what we have to work with in the heart's energy if we're going to advance spiritually. There's another beautiful story. Happened to one of the members here, Vairagi. And we had, in the early years in San Francisco, we had an ashram. And then on the other side of the town in San Francisco, we had a bookstore and restaurant that we were operating. And through some circumstances, she became the manager and had to close the store at night. And so it would be 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. When finally she was able to have everything shut down and cleaned up and locked up and then come home, she didn't drive, so she had to take the bus, and the bus went through a very difficult area of town. And so drunks and drug addicts and people that were threatening to her safety, would get on the bus. And it was a very, very difficult thing for her. So she came to Swami and explained the situation. She said, well, why don't you just drive? She said, well, I don't have a car and I can't drive. I don't have a driver's license. And he said, well, that won't work. Can you take a taxi home? Can you have somebody pick you up? Well, none of those work. He said, the only way I can get home is on the bus. He said, all right then, I want you to do this. When you get on that bus, pick out one person that needs your help, and pray for that person the whole way home. And if they get off, then pick out a second person and pray for them, and so on. But concentrate your whole bus ride on praying for that person. And she came back to Swami about 2 weeks later. She said, the bus ride has become my favorite part of the day. See how that change happens in the heart when we begin not to think of ourself, because ourself, when we think of ourself, we separate ourself from the unity. When we think of others, we expand our consciousness in such a way that we include those in our unity. And as we do that, that is the most important step we can take spiritually. Techniques, that's not what's going to get us to God liberation, to self-liberation. Techniques are an aid, but it's the control of the energy of the heart and of the consciousness and the expansion of our consciousness so that we see that everything is a part of our own self. That's what will get us to the sense of unity. Now, the other energy in the heart, so that's detach yourself. Don't give your power to things outside of yourself. Bring that back in to your own self. Remember this, your happiness is under your own control, period. Nothing has the power to make you unhappy unless you give it that power. Think of the things in your life that are making you unhappy now. You've given them the power to make you unhappy, and take that power back. Okay, if you take that power back into your own heart, there's still a second energy that we have to deal with, and that's the downward flow of energy or the upward flow of energy. So imagine that we now have all of the power in our own heart, but that energy in the heart can also flow downward. So negative emotions also reside in the heart. There's always, every emotion that we have has a dual nature, because everything in the world the substance, the structure of the world is duality. Everything in the world has a duality to it. It's one of the great keys, because if something is bothering you, look to the essence of what that thing is and find its polar opposite. It will always have a polar opposite. If you're mad at somebody, the polar opposite of being angry is love. And so if you're angry at somebody, if you give that person love and understanding, then you switch that around and you've taken control of the heart's energy. The negative emotions want to draw down and into darkness and into contraction. Positive emotions want to draw up to the higher centers and into God union. So every emotion that you have that bothers you, look for the polar opposite that's a positive one. Every positive emotion that you have, don't look for the polar opposite. You don't need it. That old song, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and don't mess with the Mr. in between. Perfect spiritual advice. So if you're working with your negative emotions, turn them positive, and that positive switch in the heart, especially to lift it up. Now, I want to give a few techniques. One is in detachment. One of the techniques that Swami gave is to feel in the heart all of the emotions before you go to bed at night, all of your attachments, all of your desires, all of your likes and dislikes. Mentally create a bonfire and cast those desires into that bonfire at night, so that when you go to sleep at night, you've cleaned your heart. He also says you can visualize the heart as a golden globe, and every desire and attachment like a little string that goes out from that and ties you to something else. Just cut those strings and polish that golden globe until it's polished and pure. And when you get that energy polished and pure, you'll be free from it. When you're working with other people, try to feel their energy. Try to feel the interaction in your heart. Try to feel where their heart energy is, not just outer circumstances. What's behind what they're saying? What emotions are they feeling? What energy are they feeling? What vibration are they feeling? And if there's any ruffle, any negativity, any difficulty in that other person, try to feel what you can do. Feel in your own heart that energy, and then feel that you're lifting it up to the spiritual eye. And from your spiritual eye, you're casting that or broadcasting that uplifted energy to the person that you're working with. By you lifting up your energy and giving it to the other person, you take positive control over the reactive process. First over your reactive process, but over the, always people interact through a reactive process. That's why if you go at somebody with negativity, they will come back at you with negativity. Get your energy positive and into the point of love, and you can work with that person and with yourself in a positive way. The most important, and I'll end with this, the most important way that we can work with the heart's energy is to concentrate on God or on Guru. And any technique that will do that will help you. I read something just a couple of weeks ago, was sent to us by a wonderful Swami Mangalananda. He's a disciple of Ananda Moy, and he sends a monthly newsletter with quotes from Ananda Moy Ma. And one of the, probably the primary technique that Ananda Moy Ma gave to her disciples, followers, to the world, was to continually chant God's name, to think of God. And someone asked her, well, but I'm busy and I'm doing things. She said, well, still chant God's name. She said, yeah, well, I can do that, but it's kind of mechanical and it won't have any power. She said, oh, no, it has a great deal of power. She used this illustration. She said, if you're walking along, walking down a path, and there's a hot ember in the path and you don't see it, but you step on it, it still burns your foot, whether you were aware of it, whether you were concentrating on it or not. If you chant God's name, even kind of in the background, it's that chanting of God's name takes the energy of the heart and it points it toward God. God resides in the higher chakras, points it toward the higher chakras, and it points it toward the source of everything. And those tapes that play in the background are very important. You've always got a tape playing in the background of your mind. Usually those tapes are negative. Gosh, I need more money. Oh, I need, if I could, oh, what's happening to my investments? I better go check the internet and see what's happening, you know, and those tapes are going around and around, or whatever your tapes are. Everybody has different tapes. Replace those tapes of negative emotion and contraction with God's name, even if you aren't concentrating on it, and it will begin to change your consciousness. Even more powerful is to do it when you do concentrate on it. And so that changing of the heart's energy, first withdrawing it, detach yourself, control the reactive process so the energy is not going down, it's going up, and then live the teachings. The teachings we're going to talk about, that's the classes throughout the rest of the week. Living the teachings are the techniques, the attitudes, and the way of life that allows us to take control. But the center of your center is your heart energy. Work with that, and you'll find God.